Hello and welcome to the Rise On podcast. I'm your host, William Clausen. I had the opportunity to sit down with Greg Welfing, an agrologist with Anatus Bioprotection. We had a fascinating discussion about integrated pest management. We talked about the different strategies of pest management and did a deep dive into beneficials and biological controls. We also had the opportunity to sit down and talk about plant health, nutrition, and the role it plays in integrated pest management. And of course, we geeked out on the future of IPM, which included drones, artificial intelligence, and biotechnology. Here's my conversation with Greg. Hello, Greg.
Hey, well.
Good. Thank you for joining us in studio today. Thanks for taking the time.
No problem.
So I have a question for you. Integrated pest management, that's what we're going to kind of talk about as an umbrella. What is integrated pest management versus just pest management?
Sure. The difference there is the word integrated, but it's...
Is it a marketing term?
No, it's definitely not a marketing term. It's more of an approach. So it's using like a pitchfork approach or a coordinated method or a system of methods in order to control pests. So using multiple different strategies all at the same time in a coordinated fashion to control pests and with actually a mind to protecting the environment at the same time.
What do you mean by pitchfork? Like as in multiple?
Yeah, multiple prongs, multiple strategies going in, working in concert with each other.
Okay.
To control pests.
And is that like a new thing or is it like, because, you know, I've part of the horticulture industry for a while, but just integrated pest management, has it never, what was it like when it was not integrated?
Sure. I mean, IPM as a concept has sort of been around since the 80s, probably. And that's really when it started to take off. So that's when it was taught in universities. And then, so there's probably been one or two generations of horticultural workers that have been working with it. But it's a holistic systems approach instead of just dealing with things on a one-off basis or as a reactionary basis. So, yeah.
And you're looking at how it interacts with other pests that may be there at the same time.
Correct. Yeah. So you're really looking at your whole operation as a whole. And then zooming in when you have to zoom in on something, but then zooming out and looking at things from a different angle. So if you really want to get into examples or specifics, like a nursery-like quality tree, they're growing, you know, 100 different species of plants, right? And they're going to get 20 different species of pests that sort of attack those. And so you do have to have a coordinated approach when you're fighting those pests because, you know, if you're doing, you know, thing A for, you know, pest A, then that might affect, you know, plant B. So you really have to do things on a coordinated basis. So, yeah.
So what is your role in that? So you work for Anatus Bioprotection. I presume that's the area you work is bioprotection. So what role, what do you do?
Sure, yeah. First of all, I'll go back just maybe a little bit and explain IPM. So like it has, or there's four main strategies in the IPM toolbox. The first one being cultural control methods. So that is like, for example, things that a grower can do to change how a pest reacts in their growing system. So like they can use things like temperature or humidity levels to control maybe what the pest is doing. And then there's another control method called mechanical control. The easiest example of that would be like a weed, right? If a weed is a pest, then a mechanical control would just be pulling it out, right? Just physically removing it. And then there's another strategy called biological control, and that's where I work in. And then the fourth strategy is chemical control. So, I work in biological control, and that's what Anatus does. So Anatus is a company that's been around for 20 years. It's based in Montreal in Quebec. We rear 20 different species of beneficial insects, and then also one beneficial fungus as well. So my job with Anatus is as an IPM specialist or a pest management specialist to go around to growers and different farms and different nurseries and advise them on their pest management strategies and how we as a company can help them in that. So biological control is just one piece of an IPM strategy, but it's a big piece. It's probably the main piece.
So if you're working for a company like Anatus, who's focusing on that biological, so you said there's cultural, which is the environmental cultural piece that the growers are doing. Mm-hmm. Then there's mechanical, which is literally taking the weed or taking the bug off the leaf.
Manipulation. Yeah.
biological is using biological means, such as beneficials, other bugs.
Correct.
Fungus.
Yeah, so like,
and then chemical is using sprays and stuff like that, or chemically synthetic or
synthetic
natural.
Pesticides. Yeah, or natural pesticides. Yeah. So biological control, we kind of split it into two different categories. So what we call microbiological control. So that's microorganisms. So things like bacteria, fungi, and viruses. That we can use to control different pests, and then also what we call macrobiological control, which is using larger organisms to control.
And I'd love to dive into that
sure.
in a minute as
yeah,
well.
Fair enough.
I just back up a little bit in terms of, so if you're just focusing on the biological, how does it interact with all the other pieces? Because I imagine it's an integrated strategy,
yeah.
but biologically you're integrating with other biological strategies, but how about chemicals? Like, do these chemicals not have an ability to kill the beneficial biological?
They definitely do. Yeah. So as part of my role, I have to be aware when I'm doing consultations with growers, those are questions I ask. Like, what are you using? You know, are you growing at this temperature? Are you growing at that temperature? I have to be aware of things that the grower is concerned about. Even topics that normally wouldn't come to top of mind. So like things like humidity, what's your humidity in your greenhouse running at? Like, I have to be aware of those things in order to make the best decision on the biological approach, yes. So all of those approaches affect each other, for sure.
And do you as companies then kind of work together? Because you're not providing chemicals, I imagine.
No, we don't provide any synthetic chemicals, no. So we do strictly on the biological side. Companies do tend to share information as much as, you know, possible.
Yeah.
And that side of things.
So what's your role then? I believe you mentioned earlier to me you're in technical sales, I think that is. So
yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, so like the company obviously rears insects. So my job is to present those insects or beneficials to growers as options for their biological control program. When I see fits that could work in a situation, then it's my job to recommend those for sure. But my overall role personally is to help the grower in the best way possible. So, yeah.
So when you say you rear 20 species, what is a species that
yeah.
of insects, what is that in the scope of insects that we are using in the industry today?
That's probably about half of the insects.
So there's about 40?
There's about 40 or so commonly used species in biocontrol. And those are like the macros that I'm talking about. So like living organisms, so things like mites and parasitoids and predators, all insects. And then there's also the microbial ones as well. So we rear one beneficial fungus
okay.
as well.
And so I guess might as well dive right into that.
Sure.
So a fungus, is this fungus then affecting the way the pests are functioning?
Yeah, so this particular one is an enzymal pathogen, so it kills certain insects. So there's about four different insect types or classes that we control with this fungus. So the product is an actual spore. So we like spray the spore onto a plant and then it lands on an insect and then goes into the insect and kills it. So from the inside out. So.
So some of your beneficials though are insects as well.
Correct. Yeah. So those dynamics are what we really have to watch. And, this particular product that I'm talking about, it doesn't really affect the bios all that much. There's one or two that it will, but yeah, so like all those bios kind of play with each other and there's complicated food webs of who eats who. And, but yeah, those are all things we have to think about when we're developing a management plan. So
as a technical salesperson, you're obviously in the business of wanting to sell these biologicals, but you're also here as I think you're an agrologist, said, yeah?
Yeah.
So you're also here as the consultant that's then guiding us through.
Correct.
So it's basically correct. One point of contact. Is
correct. Matter. Yep. We like to do it all. It actually makes it easier for everyone when you have someone that's selling the insects. I mean, that's just numbers, you know, and on paper. But when you have the technical background, you can do it pretty quickly.
So is bringing a beneficial into a greenhouse or into a nursery very much like saying, I have too many rabbits, bring in the eagles? Is that the approach or tell me?
Yeah, absolutely. So like it is sort of that concept. So it's using one living organism, so we'll call them a beneficial insect, to control another one. So like good bugs eating bad ones. In nursery settings and in greenhouses, a lot of times we get like aphids, which are pests that most people are familiar with, and spider mites, which is another pest that a lot of people are familiar with. Those things eat the plants, which is not, you know, economically beneficial to the grower, right? So yeah, we're bringing in predators to those and to eat them, and so the grower doesn't have to spray a chemical on them or lose their plants.
So what happens when the pest is gone? And you know the rabbits are gone. You have too many eagles.
Yes, too many eagles. I like that you phrase it that way. That's actually kind of funny. It depends on which eagle you're using, I guess. So like some organisms can live for a fair amount of time without food, like a few weeks or a few months.
And you mean this beneficial?
Yeah. The beneficials. Yeah. Some can only live a couple of days without food. So it really depends on which one you're using. So if they get no more food, then yes, they will die out. But that is sort of the purpose of the business, is to bring in beneficials so you don't get your pest, and then, you know, you can ship out your product. So,
And I imagine, though, is there a detriment to the, so this beneficial comes in, has a large population of aphids, it destroys all the aphids or it eats all the aphids, whatever it does with them.
Yeah.
And now you've got an overpopulation of these beneficials, possibly. Is there a detriment to the crop at that point? Like, are they, like, I've got birds all over. I got eagles flying over my yard all the time. Now I'm picking up bird excrement everywhere. Is there?
Usually not. So like, if that were to be the case, it probably wouldn't be a choice for a commercial product, right? So such things exist, but then they usually get weeded out over the years as, you know, not a very good economical option. So the IPM industry, or like beneficial insects industry, has been around for about 40 years. So like those types of products just get weeded out pretty early on.
So this is 40 years old. So in the
worldwide, I mean, it all kind of started in the Netherlands, right? And in sort of Northern Europe, that sort of area. That's where the greenhouses kind of started. Most of IPM started in the tomato greenhouses, actually. So years ago, like, you know, 50, 60 years ago, when they're growing tomatoes need to be pollinated by something. They used to pollinate by hand. So either by paintbrush or with like a vibrating wand type of thing. And then a lot of growers decided, you know what, this is not very labor efficient. So some of them played around with bumblebees, and they released bumblebees in the greenhouse, and they did all the pollination really well. But then they realized, hey, there's some chemicals and stuff we're spraying for other pests that are not beneficial to these bumblebees. So let's try to figure something out. And then they started playing with different mites and, you know, getting mites from various parts of the world and, you know, trying to control some of their other pests that way. So that's sort of how the industry got started, and, you know, started with one or two beneficial mites, and then companies were like, okay, well, this is actually working. So they started mass producing stuff and researching more and more things that they could control with beneficial insects. So that's where it is now.
Absolutely. So it's interesting you bring up the bumblebees.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that for a minute. There's been a fair amount of negative press, probably in that area, but also in the chemical control with things like Roundup and such. But this beneficial or biological control was really brought in to help with, you know, we're killing our bumblebees, we're spraying all these, I think, neonicotinoids or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right, that are killing the bumblebees. And now we're having a scare that possibly we don't have enough bees to pollinate the food sources in the world. And so these beneficials are brought in to combat that. Is there a similar risk that we're now going to be damaging them by overpopulating, changing their ecosystems?
Right now, no, I don't think so at all. I mean, I still think a lot of pollinators are still at threat from not just, you know, chemical pesticides, but from a lot of different things. So honeybees, for example, I think the stats are like a quarter of the food we eat are pollinated by honeybees, like worldwide.
Yeah.
And honeybees are still experiencing a population decline. Most of that is probably due to like colony collapse disorder, which is like a whole big topic. There's lots of different nuances to it. But chemical pesticides is one of the factors, but it's probably not the biggest one.
So maybe while we're on that topic, can you shed some light on that? Because it gets a lot of press.
Like, I'm not a beekeeper, so I don't know everything, but like, yeah, chemical pesticides is a factor that weakens bees or can kill bees, but there are others. So there are fungal and bacterial diseases that can get into hives. There's actually a mite, it's called the varroa mite, that actually attacks bees as well. So it gets into beehives and it actually latches onto bees and like sucks their blood type of thing. It's kind of like a little vampire mite. So it's colony collapse disorder is like a combination of all of those things happening all at the same time. We haven't solved that problem yet. So I don't think we're at a risk of honeybees exploding, you know,
But are we at a risk of introducing other things that will be also attacking?
In this industry, no, I don't think so at all. So all the beneficials that we release are usually quite specific to a specific pest. So for example, there's a predatory mite that we have. It's called Persimilis. It's a little orange, tiny little mite, but the only thing it eats is spider mites. So like it's not going to affect bees or anything like that. So the whole IPM industry is very conscious of ecological and environmental effects. That's like one of the core principles. So if there were to be some sort of damaging mite or insect, it's not going to make it through into any sort of control program that way. No.
So some of these beneficials target like one specific
correct
pest.
Yeah.
Wow, I can imagine the research that goes into that just to find that. So it's more or less different than the life ecosystems or the life cycles that we think of when we think of the larger order beings mm-hmm. as such. It's just one specific.
Yeah, so like, I mean, in nature, everything has found its own little niche. So, spider mites are everywhere. And so like this one predatory mite has figured out, well, I can just eat just that and survive just fine. So there are other predatory insects that we use that eat multiple things, but this one has found its niche and that's the only thing it eats. So
if these spider mites, like one thing I've always thought of, and maybe horticulturists, agrologists and stuff know this answer, but maybe there's some of our listeners who don't, is why are these pests so prevalent? And maybe the answer is a very easy answer, but why are the pests so prevalent in these nurseries and everywhere, yet these trees or whatever we're growing are everywhere, and they're not dying from these same pests. But yet in the nursery, it seems to be this gargantuan problem.
There's a couple different reasons for that, I think. One is we're doing things in nurseries that aren't really natural. So like we have large monocultural stands, right? So we're growing 1,000 trees instead of all of one species instead of...
And that then it
having biodiversity, yeah. So that monoculture is creating a pressure for the grower, and then also sometimes the environment that we grow them in. So in a greenhouse, it's fantastic for spider mites, for example. So so the environment we're growing them in, plus you know some of the cultural things that we're doing, are just creating a boon for these pests as well. So in
say for example this spider mite and this. As beneficial that eats that spider mite or attacks that spider mite, does it not come along with the environment when we're growing the plant in the first place, or is it just because there's such a huge pest pressure that it just can't keep up?
That's exactly it. So
so you're just trying to make it a fair playing field.
We're trying to make it a fair playing field, or even overwhelm. So like in the biocontrol world, overwhelming a pest is never a bad idea. So that's actually usually the most economically viable strategy.
Yeah.
It's just completely overwhelm it, get it down to its lowest possible numbers before it can flare up again. So part of my job is we're always watching these population dynamics. So pests usually reproduce faster than their predator, right? So
like viruses.
Exactly, right? So in general, we're always watching these population curves all the time.
So what do you do? Are you monitoring your pest pressures and then monitoring your beneficial pressures as well? Because I've even walked through a greenhouse the other day where I saw this little pot of grass on a pillar and like, oh, that's like a place where our beneficials live. So they have like a hotel to live.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's usually what we call like a banker plant system. Banker plant system. Okay. So there's a couple different reasons to have banker plant systems. So I can get into the nerdy details if you want, but
let's go.
Sure. Sir. There's one. Okay. So aphids are like a major pest in greenhouses. There are some aphids that feed only on monocot plants, so like grasses, and there are some aphids that feed on dicots, so like leafy plants, and there are some that feed on both. One of the pests that we get in greenhouses are like the green peach aphid, for example, which feeds on multiple different things, so it can feed on grasses and dicots and everything else. We use a parasitoid wasp, which is a tiny little flying wasp, and it lands on an aphid. It'll lay its egg inside the aphid, and then the developing larvae will eat the aphid from the inside out. And that creates like those little mummies maybe that you've seen. So like those little waxing paper mummies. So, and then the new wasp will emerge from there and repeat the life cycle. But one thing we use is banker plants. We use it as an aphid control strategy. And then we put a specific type of aphid on there that only eats grasses. And then we grow a grass in that pot. We put that aphid on there. But that parasitoid can also attack that aphid that's on the grass and repeat its life cycle on that banker plant. So it's a constant cycling that's happening there. And then those new parasitoids can go out into your crop and attack the aphids that are on your crop as well.
Okay, so your banker plant is actually there to give the beneficial a life source.
Correct.
While it's defeated the pest population.
Correct.
But that pest population in that banker plant is not going to attack
your beneficial plants or the plants that you're trying to grow.
So that is truly integrated.
Yeah, it truly is an integrated approach. That's sort of like the simple version of banker plant. There's some more complicated ones. There's another predator that's called aureus. It's a flying bug. If you've ever seen like a stink bug, they kind of look like that except a bit smaller. But they eat thrips, which is another major horticultural pest.
I've heard that
word. Yeah, in times. Yeah, thrips is another pest. They suck juices out of plants. But anyways, so aureus flies around and it eats those thrips. But flying is a very like energetically costly thing to do for an insect. And so it needs a lot of nectar. And so there's another plant that we grow. It's called alyssum, which contains a lot of nectar. And then we just put those into a greenhouse and then the aureus will feed on that nectar to get their energy to go control the pest. So that's using like a total integrated approach in order to control your pest.
So you're not only bringing in the beneficiary, you're giving them a place to stay, a place to
correct
or get hungry, or a place to have enough energy to go to battle and do what they need to do.
Correct. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's it takes a lot of thought. It takes a lot of knowledge on, you know, your pest biology, your host biology. And all of those things have to come up in conversation when you're developing a pest plan.
So there is a real effort. It was one of my questions earlier, but you've answered it with the banker plant, which I thought was slightly different than what you explained. So that's awesome. Okay. So there is a concerted effort to say, if we cannot have this beneficial die off, but keep living and then come back when the population surges of the pest again, then that's a preferred method.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what we call like reservoir planting type of thing. So it's a way to increase biodiversity for that exact reason, to keep your beneficials around. That's actually sort of it's not a new topic, but it's a topic that's seeing a resurgence in agriculture in general. So even in like blueberry production or like outdoor strawberry production, actually even in the prairies in like potato production and stuff, we were actually seeing people planting reservoir strips of plants like marigolds and alyssum to attract beneficials so that those beneficials will help control pests in their potato fields.
Is that why my dad always planted marigolds around some of
that? That's probably exactly why. So it's attracting things like hoverflies and lacewings, ladybugs, which then attack all your pest insects. Yeah.
So off way off topic.
Yeah.
You work for Anantis Biomedica, mm-hmm. which is a commercial company, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's not a not-for-profit org.
No.
How does that help you commercially? If you're saying, well, I'm not going to sell you beneficials, you just keep reproducing your own. Is there...
Yeah, but that's fine with us. Like, we're totally fine with that.
Good answer.
Yeah, that's totally fine with us. I mean, everyone that works for a company is like a biologist or an environmentalist.
So it's about so that.
It's not really about that. It's not about selling products. I don't think we'll ever get to the stage where human beings will have like managed the environment so much that we'll never need beneficial insects.
We're not that good.
We're not that good. The trend is sort of the other way around. So that's kind of why we exist. I don't think we'll ever get to that point, so I'm not too worried about that. I wish we would get to that point, but...
No, we won't. So speaking of costs, I guess that was a segue
sure.
that area, is what's the difference between this and chemical? Like, is there a benefit for me as an owner saying, well, it's going to cost me $3 a plant versus $1.22 or whatever it is, mm-hmm. if I'm using a beneficial over a spray that I can... Although sprays can't be cheap either.
Yeah, exactly. So... just in general, the economic discussion is always there. It's actually a piece of the puzzle. When I'm talking with growers about implementing a biological program, cost is always there. Practicality is always there. So like those questions are always around. But in general, if you do a proper IPM program, it will cost you less in the long run versus
you
not
have remaining biological, or you mean not having it at all?
No, like, yeah, exactly. Like not having an IPM program at all. So like chemicals are part of the IPM program. It's sort of like the last thing on the list. So we actually do priority ranking, right? So like cultural and what I said, like mechanical controls, those are the first two priorities in terms of implementing an IPM program. And then the third level is biological control, and then the fourth level is chemical control. So it still has its place.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of obviously prior to biological, chemical was higher in the ranking list.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a major cost difference between biological and chemical?
Really not. No. I mean, depending on what you're growing and what the crop is. In high value crops, no, there's really no difference. Biological programs will actually cost you less in the long run versus a strictly chemical program, because with chemicals, a lot of times you're killing everything, right? Good and bad. And so when you're killing everything, it's a lot easier for the bad ones to flare up again. And so you're constantly on what we call this chemical treadmill. So when you have a base level of biological control agents in a growing situation, then you don't get nearly as bad flare-ups and you don't have to spray as often. So it ends up being cheaper in the long run.
So tell me about, you rear these insects.
Mm-hmm.
Is this very much like rearing crickets for, you know, snake owners or raising chickens, or like what is...
Yeah.
Do you have the massive facilities that are rearing insects?
You don't need massive facilities, no. You could do it in sheds and barns and stuff too. Each one is a little bit different though, so like it's kind of hard to explain, but some beneficials, in order to rear them, you actually need to do to like grow a plant and grow the pest. And so like that predator mite for spider mites I was talking about, we actually need to grow like tobacco plants, and then we put spider mites on there, and then we put the beneficial mite on there, let it do its thing, and then we harvest those beneficial mites. So
And why specifically that plant?
Just because it has very wide leaves and it's very lots of surface area.
Yeah,
that's why.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's surface area, and they are attracted to that.
They're attracted to it. They eat it. They do well on it. Both species do well on it. So yeah, all of those things are factored. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And where do you do that in Canada?
So like our facility's in Montreal, okay. Or just outside of Montreal. And then we also have an R&D lab in Montreal as well.
Okay, so that's where most of it. So, and then you ship them out here?
We ship them all out, all across Canada, just via couriers.
Yeah.
So, in North America, there's not that many companies that do what we do. It's only a handful, probably about five or six.
Yeah. Wow. So, is there a connection between IPM and plant nutrition? So nutrition being the health of the plant, and yes, there's a connection, obviously, of less bugs is a healthier plant. Mm-hmm. But what about I'm giving this plant nutrition, fertilizers? Does that play a role in IPM? And do some bugs come when there's certain nutrients in the soil better than others? And
absolutely, yes. I suspect you know the answer to this already.
I would imagine the answer is yes, but maybe elaborate on it.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So one of the mechanisms that we see is when you're growing plants, you want them to grow faster, right? And because that leads to higher turnover and more money. One of the ways to do that is using nitrogen-based fertilizers. Nitrogen actually has been shown over the years to, you know, increase leafy growth, right? But one of the things that happens is when a plant is growing too fast, its cells become like weaker, basically, and you get a lot like. You get weaker cell walls, which makes it easier for a pest to attack.
It's growing too fast.
It's growing too fast.
It doesn't have a hardening cycle at all.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So one of those pests that I was talking about, like spider mites, for example, they really like it when you pump the nitrogen in a plant, because they feed off of it too. So that's definitely a link. So the faster you're pushing your plants, the weaker they're going to get. Plants also exude like hormones and pheromones and stuff. A lot of pest insects can pick up on those. So like, say for example, there's a root disease that's affecting a plant. That plant is weaker overall because it's fighting off this disease. A lot of pest insects can pick up on that, and they can it's releasing different pheromones and hormones and things, and pests can pick up on that and target that one specifically so that they won't get fucked.
It's kind of like a dog saying, that's the fearful guy. I'm gonna go
That's the weak one. Yeah, I'm going to go after this one. Yeah, exactly. So,
and apparently a research study that someone, I think it was Steph here at Poultry, that shared that about in Tel Aviv, they're now learned that plants can even make noises at very high frequencies.
Yes.
So very similar, they're releasing these pheromones as a result of the stress they're going on.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of that stuff we as humans don't pick up on, but in the insect world, there's a lot of information out there that we're not picking up on, but they absolutely do. So yeah, just back to the nitrogen thing, I don't think I really explained it very well, but yeah, the more nitrogen you pump, the faster your plant's going to grow, but the weaker it's going to be, and the insects are going to pick up on that and maybe target that one. So that's definitely a thing. So I've in the past have recommended to growers to like scale down the fertilizer just a little bit, just so that you give your plants a fighting chance. So a
plant growing in its natural way, which I guess could answer part of my question earlier as well, is when I'm growing a hedge at home, mm-hmm. it's growing in its natural environment. I'm not pouring on the nutrients like someone who wants to grow it in 2 years.
Correct.
I may actually be growing a bit of a stronger plant, which could be slightly more resistant to these spider mites.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times in horticulture and agriculture, we're doing things that aren't necessarily natural. We're doing things against its natural way of wanting to be, just because that's what we want. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I remember years ago, my father-in-law used to grow acres and acres of trees, and we'd literally go around with these white lids and try to find the spider mites, mm-hmm. knock them off. And mm-hmm. But yet my hedge at home never had those on it. So that was why I had asked that question.
And that's probably the link right there. He's just pushing that plant as hard as it can go, and that's attracting the pests.
Dragon fast because it's not quite as
and I guess that's
with any animal where we're pumping in the hormones or whatever, the fertilizers, the nutrients,
exactly,
a weaker,
exactly. I mean, yeah, you see it in even in hydro organisms like chickens and stuff too. If you're pumping hormones, then you know they get weaker and they get other problems.
So how you're growing the plant, yes, you want to push for speed and excellence because of cost and all those things, because the economy obviously plays a factor. However, there's a large impact is what I'm hearing on the pests you may be attracting or the things you may be doing.
Yeah, and that's all part of the cultural management side of things. So like those are all conversations that you have with growers.
So like you said, you have those conversations where you do say, you know, you may need to just back off on this fertilizer versus that one.
Mm-hmm.
So does that sometimes require a huge team of people, I can imagine, because you got to be a biologist, horticulturist, agrologist, all of it together.
You have to have a wide range of experience in order to do this job. So, you have to have seen things. You have to have been around the block a little bit, I guess you can say. But then you also have to talk with the growers who are here every day, and you have to have those conversations all the time.
Absolutely. So you talked about, you know, the chemical, obviously early 1900s already, we had companies like Dow Chemical who were making chemicals to spray. Then the biological piece came in, and now we're talking fungi and things like that. Where do you see future technology as such? Because now we're talking, you know, I'll use the word GPT, we're talking all kinds of things. So let's go into that. And of course, not just AI, but Where's the future of this, and not better sprayers, but obviously we're talking some of these pieces as well.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, like you hit upon, in the 60s and 70s, there was sort of that what we call the chemical revolution in the agriculture industry, where every company was coming up with new chemistry, and that's what was going on in the field. Right now, we're in the midst of the biological revolution, right? So we're coming up with a lot of new beneficial pest control species. So yeah, whether that be like a mite or whether that's a fungus or a bacteria, so like it's a big boon right now in this industry. There's new products coming out every other month. And then you also mentioned on the technology side. So in the next 5-6 years, there's going to be a lot of developments. One of the areas I see is drone technology, which is a big thing. So it's actually going to like reduce dependence on tractors and other field equipment. So right now drones are able to do spraying out in fields, especially, you know, like open fields. So, you know, things like blueberries or strawberries, drones are able to go spray things. I mean, there's a lot of legislation around all that has to change, but in the next 3-4 years, that'll probably be settled out. So we're going to see a lot of drone spraying happening in the next little bit.
That can be really localized then, and really you can, so you can be more economical as well, because you're like, you got a hot spot, you don't have to pull out your tractor for that.
Correct.
You just go take the care of that.
Correct. Yeah. And then we're actually releasing biologicals via drone already. So
like releasing
beneficial insects via drone already. So
what's the benefit there of doing it?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
How else would you release them?
By hand.
Okay.
So for example, in Quebec, there's a caterpillar that attacks corn. It's called the European corn borer. It bores into the corn stalk and makes the plant fall over because it eats it from the inside. We actually have another one of those tiny little parasitoid wasps that flies around, and it lays its egg inside the egg of a caterpillar and eats the egg of the caterpillar. But we actually put those parasitoids in a little capsule, and then we can put those in a drone, and we can fly over a cornfield, and we can drop all these little biodegradable capsules in the cornfield.
Efficiency scale.
It's an efficiency scale, yeah. Instead of doing that by hand, which would be incredibly inefficient, and also driving through a cornfield, you're going to wreck half your crop. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're delivering those biologicals by drones, and so the application of what we're already doing is just going to get more efficient.
It's going to get far more efficient. I mean, labor is a big topic in this industry, so anything to reduce dependence on manual labor. And I had another. Oh yeah, in drones, there's actually a company in Europe that's using drones actually inside of greenhouses. So they're actually a very small little drone. I don't know, maybe about the size of your hand or so. And they have a series of these tied to sensors in a greenhouse, and the sensors can pick up whenever there's a moth flying in the greenhouse, and it knows what is flying in there because it's been trained by AI to recognize moth flights. And as soon as it detects a moth, it dispatches a drone from a little platform, and the drone goes there and just basically buzzes through the moth and kills it, and then goes back to its platform.
So laser beams.
No, no, but it is a little attack drone. It just like buzzes right through the moth and kills it. So, but yeah, that's sort of a nice little.
It comes back to get wiped clean and then go do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So
that just prompts a little question. What about tiny little micro drones that like the U.S. Army and stuff obviously have claimed they make that are the size of a fly?
I have no experience with those.
They can infiltrate the colonies, but is there those kind of technologies?
Not that I've experienced in this industry, but now that you mention it, I could probably think of a few applications where that could be useful. Like monitoring beehives and things like that, but I'm very excited to see where that technology is going in the next few years. And you mentioned AI. I think the combination of drones and AI is going to be big. AI is actually probably going to help a lot of researchers as well. You can't forget, like, in the background, there's a lot of government and university researchers always doing, basic scientific research, on temperatures and biological dependencies of certain species. So AI is going to help them be able to like map certain species, map spreads, and And so I think a lot of that basic biological research is going to have a big boom with AI.
So making all of this research that's in the market right now way more accessible.
Absolutely.
And right alongside.
Yeah, and faster.
Yeah,
and
so
faster.
You don't need to know about some cool research in some country where they've done it. The AI is going to bring that a lot closer.
Yeah, it'll bring it to you, and it'll also help them do it a lot faster so they can. Like in the past 60 years, like a scientist could spend his entire career really just mapping out one species. I mean, that has happened before, right? So, and combating one species. But with the benefits of AI, they can, simulate things a lot faster, and perhaps it'll speed up a lot of this research.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're seeing AI that's assisting thing. We're seeing big drones that are going to make applications and stuff more efficient. And then, so what do you call these little attack drones? Like, do they have a name? Or?
The company that's selling them, I can tell you the name. It's called PATS, P-A-T-S. I don't know what that stands for.
But is there a name of the technology, or is it just called drone technology?
It's just a drone technology. Yeah.
Do you see any future in where biology and technology are like, so I see an attack drone really just, yeah, okay, that's an attack drone, but it's not really biotech, if you will.
No.
So is there things happening in that area?
There are definitely things happening in that area. There's a new technology coming out. It's a mix of biology and AI. So like in horticulture, we use yellow sticky cards a lot. Yellow sticky cards attract insects and they get stuck. And then we can monitor what's kind of going on in the crop and what sort of flying insects are there. There's a new AI tool coming out, and it's been developed in the last few years, but it can basically just take a picture of that yellow staking card, scan it, and it has been learned, or it has learned over hundreds of hours of being trained on AI, what each insect pest looks like when they're trapped on sticky cards, and it can identify insects on sticky cards, so like you don't have to sit there manually counting it by hand anymore. So those sorts of efficiencies are
technology
coming.
And then obviously, and as we mentioned before, you know, we're in the process of building and releasing a piece of software in the industry, so that will help out with pest management and all kinds of pieces. Running the whole horticulture business, basically. So these types of technologies that are then, like you said, this picture taking software that then says, okay, you got 32 thrips, you have this many whiteflies, you have this much, that information can all be fed into these other systems that then says, oh, you've hit a threshold, it's time to spray, send out a drone, do what they need to do.
Yep, absolutely.
Or send out a beneficial or whatever it is.
Yeah, so like a lot of large scale greenhouses like this, they have IPM specialists on staff whose job it is really just to scout greenhouses and scout their growing nursery every day, and know where the hotspots are, what's happening in the greenhouse, and that sort of software is going to make their life a lot easier. There is some like really nice scouting software that's coming out onto the market as well. So like it's all GPS based, and you can do it on your phone type of thing, where a scout can be in the crop and just take pictures, and it's all GPS based. But then it can also go relate to the administrative side of things. You know, you have to order so many bugs for this, you have to order this chemical, you have to do this next week type of thing. So those efficiencies are coming for sure.
So is there any other things in terms of the future of IPM? Any thoughts you want to share?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot more biological species coming out. I think every company has a few in the works. So every year there seems to be a new beneficial that kind of hitting the market. The last 2 years we've had a couple. But I think soil health is probably going to see the biggest boon in the next few years. So,
elaborate.
Yeah, sure. So when you look at like a cup of soil, there's probably more organisms in that one cup of soil than there are human beings on the planet. So if you go out in your garden, you take a cup of soil, there's over 6 billion type of organisms in there.
Seems like an awful lot.
It is an awful lot. So like there's a lot of bacteria, a lot of fungi.
Like 6 billion different ones of the same ones? Yeah, okay.
Billion in number, but yeah, probably a million different species of thing. Science probably only knows about like 10,000 of them.
So what are we doing in space? We can just go into the dirt.
Right, exactly. I know. We need a lot more scientists studying the dirt than we do space. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But no, space is cool too. But there's a lot of information coming out there as to what's actually happening in that space. And of course there's going to be a complex food web, you know, who's eating who, and we really have not even touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to that. There's a few different ones that have been identified in the last 10 years, and those are starting to become commercialized. So like you'll see mixtures of a few different beneficial fungi coming out. And that sort of happened in the last 2 years, and I think we're going to see a very long continuance on that.
So is that where you said you grow one fungus, I think you said, right? So, and so this evolution of all these fungi that we're identifying, you're seeing that as a real frontier where like maybe that's, there's answers in there.
There's a lot of answers in there to, maybe a lot of problems that we haven't actually even encountered yet. So, and you're actually, I mean, if you really want to look at evidence of that, take a look at companies that historically were chemical manufacturers. You know, you mentioned the Dows and the Bayers and Monsantos. They're actually buying up a lot of companies that are researching the biological side of things. So they've caught on to that, and they're spending a lot of time.
Future,
yeah. Exactly, yeah. So they're spending a lot of time and money and effort into researching that stuff too. So that is the future in the near sense.
So we talk about specifically soil health. So now we're getting into the whole area of these soil mixes are already being brought in. So the true form of integrated pest management is only going to become more integrated.
It's only become more complex. Yeah. And the more we know, the more we can manipulate, right? So,
And control and make sure that we're providing the best plant and not destroying itself by doing things we don't know.
Exactly. Right. So.
Wow. So soil health, any other ideas around? Like, so you already talked about the biotech or obviously the AI technology and all of that stuff. So definitely just kind of in the biological revolution, if you will, but already there's other revolutions that are technology.
yeah, that are starting to take shape. And yeah, I'm excited to see where they all land. The drone stuff, it's taken a while to develop, but it's really starting to take off, pardon the pun. So,
and obviously we've talked a lot about growing ornamentals and trees and stuff, but all of this stuff applies to food source as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Food scarcity is a big topic. So all of these things are beneficial in that area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the vast majority of customers we actually work with are food producers. And so, here in Canada, we grow like a lot of things in greenhouses. So like tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, cool sorts of crops.
Do you see that? And maybe this, because you work in that area, I'm kind of curious, do you see that? There's been a lot of talk about GMO and all that stuff, and there's still people who are like, oh, I don't want that. And there's people like, what's wrong with it? So I imagine that would all of this stuff that we're working on also kind of allay some of those fears, saying do we even need to be doing so much GMO if we only know 2% and 10% of what it's actually growing in?
Yeah, exactly. I think GMO was like a super exciting technology in the 80s, 90s, and aughts. I don't think it's going to be as popular as
that's kind of the sense I was getting. That's what I wanted.
Yeah. So like, I don't think it's going to be as popular, in terms of the general sense. Like, I don't think we're just going to, start, GMOing our apples again. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it will happen in terms of, disease resistance and pest resistance in plants. So, if you're a company that grows peppers for seeds, right? Like you're selling pepper seeds to growers, you're going to want to make sure that those seeds and those plants are disease resistant to as many things as possible. So I think that's the direction things are going in. It's not going to be the anti-browning apple anymore, but it's going to be like disease resistant. Historically, that's always been the purview of breeding programs, right? In order to breed resistance into a line of genetics. But there's new genetic tools out there. So like the CRISPR technology, if you've ever heard of it. So I think that makes that research go a lot faster.
What's CRISPR? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a geneticist, but CRISPR is a tool that geneticists can use basically to like pull genes out of one thing and put it into another organism. So the analogy that I've heard is that it's like opening a book and just pulling out one little letter and putting it somewhere else in a different book. It's very precise. It's a very precise tool.
No, that's fascinating. So, so you're seeing more of an emphasis on, yeah, GMO was cool. It was awesome. It was exciting. Let's not be focused on the convenience of what we're eating. Let's focus on the ability for it to sustain itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and historically in the past, companies have used GMOs to like breed herbicide resistance into corn to make it easier to grow or, to be able to withstand herbicides, but I don't think that sort of technology is going to last.
Yeah.
It's not going to stand the test of time, I don't think.
Well, in essence, we were really just breeding something or trying to change the corn so that we could spray a chemical on it. Well, if we don't not spraying the chemical anymore, exactly. Then what's the gene for?
Exactly. So I think we're going to be a lot smarter with where we're using these technologies. So,
Wow. Well, Greg, you've absolutely blown my mind in terms of pest management versus integrated pest management.
Okay.
I'm delighted just to hear where it's going, and you've almost convinced me to become an agrologist. it's super exciting, and just thanks so much for feet coming out and talking about it.
Yeah, not a problem.
Again.
Yeah, I'm glad to get to have an interest, and I hope your listeners are interested in the topic as much as I am. So
absolutely awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, not a problem. Thank you.